Welcome to Conversations on Wealth, a podcast series that explores financial complexities and modern strategies for the discerning investor. Brought to you by Ropan Financial Services. Now to our host.
Welcome to Conversations on Wealth, presented to you by Ropan Financial Services. My name is John Calabro and I'll be your host today. I'm joined once again by the directors of Ropan Financial Services, Rodney Gillam and Jason Panotto-Tillier, to discuss all things wealth. Boys, welcome to 2024.
That's quick.
You're looking very relaxed, I've got to say.
Yeah, thanks. Gym session's done. I'm into it.
Yeah. Rodney, how's the fishing been over summer?
Yeah, it's been a good season, John. Yeah, the marlin have been biting. Mixed weather, I suppose, over the period. But yeah, we've had a good season. It's been good.
Yeah, and I can see in your office you've got quite the piece mounted on the wall there. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that's a swordfish that we caught a couple of years ago off Lake's Entrance. So it's been a 2.5 year wait to have that one put together by the artiste, the taxidermist, but he's done a good job. It's a fiberglass mount and done a beautiful job on the paint job. So how
do they get that? Like, is that the actual fish? Have they made a mold from it? How does that even work?
Yeah, that was a mold of someone else's fish. So we got to, I guess, butcher ours and eat it. And it's a similar size. So, yeah, pretty happy with it.
Amazing. Yeah, it's an impressive piece on the wall. Jace, how are you spending your time at the moment, mate? I see you going to the gym a bit.
Go to the gym, trying to plan overseas trips, dialogue with Rodney, the team, keep things moving, just trying to live life, really.
Now, overseas trips, any highlights you want to share?
None whatsoever. Pending.
Right, okay.
We're on podcast.
All right, guys, well, we're back obviously to discuss all things wealth and a new year starts and obviously everyone comes out after Christmas, a lot of New Year's resolutions going on. What's the feeling in the markets and around the business circles? What are you noticing?
It's been a good period for investors, John. The last year, probably 12, 18 months, was a little bit tough. With interest rates increasing, it gave alternate investment opportunity for investors, so which meant equity markets were a little bit down for a while, a little bit stagnant. But with the prediction of interest rates dropping off later this year, the market certainly priced that in, and we're seeing double-digit returns for investors on, you know, their super investments or other investment sort of structures. So, yeah, it's pretty positive, but probably for those that might have sat on the sidelines, they might have missed out on a little bit of upside. So, yeah, you might start to see people sort of scrambling for access to investment markets. Yeah, maybe even the property market, you might see a bit more transactions happening at the moment as people sort of factor in interest rates, cost of interest reducing again. So you might start to see people willing to start borrowing a bit more.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And when you mentioned earlier about alternate investments, what kind of things, what are people, you know, what is the alternate?
Oh, probably in the context I meant was more getting back to cash and fixed interest style investments, John, because obviously with rates dropping down to all-time lows, people had probably exited those markets a little bit more. But definitely over the last probably 18 months, the banks would have seen the term deposit coffers increase again. Jason, did you have some depositor flow data on that?
Not so much depositor flow data, but I've certainly got the debt flow over that same period, which is maybe the opposite of what we're talking about.
Yep.
But global debt's gone up about $200 billion, they say, so around the $235 trillion mark. And in the Aussie market, debt's gone up from 1.9 to 2.1, 2.2 billion.
Yeah, debt isn't always a bad thing depending on what seat you're sitting in. Is that correct? There's people out there obviously harvesting good profits from debt, but it's not necessarily the mum and dad investor in their land dreams, is it? Tell us a bit more about that, Jase.
Well, debt markets are part of the overall financial markets that people can invest into. It's not something that people typically and deliberately do, but for the right type of investor, either the institutional type or the sophisticated investors, there's probably two forms of debt they do invest in. One's called a distressed asset or distressed company, and the other one's called private debt.
Yeah. Can you give us some examples of when those might play out, or what's a kind of scenario that people might be familiar with where they might see that happening?
Yeah, your bigger institutions probably like the distressed market because they are actually investing into companies in which their business model is standard and predictable. The product and service is niche, and therefore the balance sheet play in which they're investing into can be restructured. And they do that to either take a longer-term equity position in the company and then control of the company, or they might do that as a loan-to-loan type of investment arrangement where there's more of a fixed interest income return on that play.
Okay, so based on what Rodney's saying now, with the potential of interest rates maybe dropping and the market looking like it's starting to galvanise a little, how does that change for people out there, or based on what you've just said, how does that change things?
I don't think it really does. I think it just comes down to people's appetite for risk versus reward. And like you said earlier, John, people see debt in a different light compared to others, and some people see the equity position as more opportunistic and different to other sectors in the marketplace. It's all part of the overall financial market, really.
Mm-hmm. Rodney, you mentioned before that, perhaps over the last little while, there's been some double-digit returns in some areas. What kind of asset classes are yielding that kind of response, and, is there still opportunity there?
Yeah, the main asset class has been international shares, John, so mm-hmm. both in Australian dollars and unhedged to the US dollar. So I think the MSCI sort of market, broader market, the return outside of Australian dollars has been about 28% for the 12 months.
That's big.
And around 23% hedged back to the Australian dollar.
What's MSCI? What's that?
Morgan Stanley Capital Index.
Okay, I got the letters in the wrong way, sorry. Well, that's pretty impressive numbers. And are we? Is it mainly in tech stocks? Are we seeing it in property stocks? Or how's that being spread around?
I think the key theme at the moment's been AI.
Ah, yes.
Yep. So there's definitely been a run there, but definitely the tech stocks, John. So
yep.
Probably a question for investment committees and groups like ours and other institutional investors is whether or not they keep the same allocation to those international exposures, because with return of 23 to 28% versus, say, 7 or 8% property market for the bigger end of town and similar results for the Australian equity market, I think people will be considering whether or not they keep the same allocations, or maybe take some profit off of the top and maybe reallocate to some other markets that haven't done quite as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've got a couple of questions that come out of that. What's the likelihood? I mean, this is different to the dot-com bubble of the early 2000s, is it not? I mean, AI is obviously hitting the ground running and everyone wants to be on the next AI bandwagon, but it's not the same as the dot-com era, assuming. How do you guys see that?
I think investors have got to be careful, John. I had a holding in Appen Group in Australia, and at one point through COVID that was holding on really well as a stock. I think it hit a peak of around $40 a share. They've had issues around probably these other AI companies with better technologies and better processes. That stock has virtually been wiped off the market. Mm. Real shame. It had revenues of $300-400 million, and just with the way the technology's gone, they're virtually down to $1 a share. So,
because they'd been around a long time, hadn't they? They'd had lots of good hype and good reviews about them for a long time, hadn't they?
Yeah, they were performing great, but just one of those ones where, probably through their board minutes and their releases to the investors, it was hard to read it, but the share price didn't lie and it just kept dropping. Their capitalization dropped from, I think, $5 or $6 billion down to about $200 million.
Jeez, that's a massive drop.
That's a big hit, yeah.
But that is different to the AI boom. The dot-com boom. As I remember, the dot-com boom was companies written on a piece of paper with some kind of exotic leader convincing people that they were worth a lot more than they were, and then the straw house fell, so to speak. Whereas this is what you're talking about more so is potentially old or legacy technology being overwhelmed by new technology, which is actually tangible, right? That's genuine gain. So
yeah, Yep, sounds like it. It's just something for people, I guess, with consistent investment approach, then maybe people won't get caught out in these sectors as much. But it's definitely appears like it might be a bit of an inflated market at the moment, the tech sector and the US in particular. So it'd be interesting to see 12 months from now, if we look from today's date to 12 months, what the return going forward is from a capital and income point of view.
If it's an inflated market, what are the signs of a correction on its way? And it might not be a major one, but, you know, this fact that, you know, it might come back. What kind of things over the years should people have looked out for, or what were the patterns?
Maybe Google, YouTube. Yeah, it's funny the themes you see come out through the algorithms of YouTube in terms of, like, inflation was definitely a big issue probably 12 months ago, 18 months ago, interest rates. Maybe now there's talk around these technologies.
Yeah.
So, it's definitely – but it is difficult to time markets, and that's something where I guess, you know, a lot of your firms look to have some diversification in client portfolios, because it's very hard to time any particular market segment or market, or, you know, as you drill down to individual companies. So that's why most portfolios have a diversified strategy to them, John, because it is very hard to pick it.
Yeah. Yeah. Jason, you want to add any comment to any of that?
It's interesting. I'm reading a book at the moment called The Psychology of Money. It seems to be a bestseller, and it talks about the behaviours of investors as opposed to the analytical approach.
Okay.
And those behaviours being largely determined by the era in which you were born. So there's been a direct correlation between if you were born pre-World War II and went through, you know, the Great Depression versus if you're born in the 60s and 70s and experienced high inflation. Evidently, those economic conditions largely dictated how you invested in the longer term. So that's quite interesting from my point of view. Two economists in 2006, Ulrich Malminder and Stefan Nagel from the National Bureau of Economic Research, dug through 50 years' worth of consumer behaviour on investing. And the conclusion from that analysis was people don't invest their decisions, make investment decisions based on their goals. They make it based on their behaviours and what they hear at the barbecue, around the table, down at the local sporting venue, whatever. So it's quite interesting.
So everyone's a financial advisor, is that what you're saying?
No, I just think there's a new generation coming through, and whilst we have the benefit of some history and experience, that new generation looks at these new sectors with a different lens. And perhaps there's some criticism for that, but perhaps on the other side they're seeing an opportunity that others don't see. It just begs the question, what's the reason for your investing and what are you willing to invest into?
Yeah, yeah. And this is – that point to some degree comes to financial planning 101, doesn't it? Risk assessment, profile, you know, looking at your asset allocations. Do you guys want to just – you know, for those who aren't aware of that, what are those basic principles and fundamentals of getting your investment strategy right?
I think traditionally it is, you know, breaking up in – terms of different asset classes, John. So, be it equities, property, debt markets, which you spoke about before. So just, you know, spreading and diversifying and being consistent with the investment approach. But there's no doubt, and Jason's alluded to it, the different generations coming through. Like we get back to the crypto market conversation. That seems to be hotting up again, and I think there's definitely an undercurrent of people that are supporters of those markets and you know, investing their capital towards those different coins and you know, Bitcoin, Ethereum, that sort of thing. So, yeah, definitely the different types or generations of investors have got their own way of going about it.
AI is this year's cryptocurrency by the sounds of it. But look, it's not to downplay any of those spaces. I think they all have their value. I think, you know, Bitcoin is bouncing back up pretty high from when I last looked.
Yeah, it has.
Yeah.
Well, I think its market capitalization is probably similar to Apple Group.
Really?
So
that's huge.
Yeah, it's a solid storehouse of value at the moment. But yeah, we're definitely seeing as clients sort of go through the life stages that the more mature market is looking for solid and well-researched strategies with their investments and their future investment plans as well. So we're definitely seeing investors coming in that are looking for strategy and structure and service as well, John. It's a lot of people probably don't know where to turn to set up an investment portfolio or a crypto exchange account, that sort of thing. So whilst there's technologies out there, there's still that people-to-people sort of interaction that, you know, people still need support.
No, I think coming back to what you said before, Jason, you might hear about something at the barbecue or at the local footy club or, you know, in conversation with someone down the street. But ultimately, if you're looking to build or grow your wealth and you've got a long-term view, it pays to keep an eye on that long-term view and keep your asset allocations where they should be. How frequently do you think people should be having a good look at where, you know, where their percentages are, you know, how much they've got in property, how much they've got in shares, how much they've got in you know, bank deposits and so on, and reallocating? How frequently should that happen?
I like it. It's something that should be kept an eye on every year or two, John.
Yeah,
definitely. And we have found that the clients that stick to a strategy and their allocations generally outperform. We noticed last year that some clients were definitely questioning their allocations and the performance of some of their investments. But to the credit of the clients that had those conversations and rode through what was a little bit of a storm with the interest rate changes, those that have come through it, like we've got some portfolios that are showing a 15-16% yearly return at the moment. So there's definitely been pretty good rewards for those that have stuck solid to their strategies.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Mm. Yeah, it's a good story. Yeah. It's interesting. In this book, there's an example of that particular point, Rodney. There's a guy by the name of Ronald Reed who died in 2014, and for 25 years he basically was a mechanic in a car lot and swept the floor of various different public venues. But when he died at 92, he left an estate worth over $8 million. And in 2014, 2.8 million Americans died. Less than 4,000 people had over $8 million to their name. So this guy became a philanthropist, an investor and so forth, but obviously he kept his strategy simple. He had his cohort of advisors around him, and with the benefit of time and experience, he's grown a fairly sizable nest egg.
Yeah, it's an interesting point you raise in regards to philanthropy. I was at the golf course recently and the director of membership and sponsorship was just saying there's some conversations around the club, how they can engage members in relation to bequests and maybe some donations. And it turns out there might be well be some golf foundations where a contribution can be made that's deductible, and also whether there's a conversation around bequests to help support some capital improvements with the golf club, obviously improvement that is difficult to find from the day-to-day revenue. And that'll be something for that director to go back to the board and have a conversation, and whether or not there can be dialogue with members about supporting the club over and above other bequests or denominations that they might have, say, passing down their funds to their children or grandchildren.
Amazing. I think a lot of people would love to be in that situation that as they're getting older in life, that, you know, they can be giving back to their community with such volume like that. You know, I think that's a nice situation to be in. It's a nice goal to have.
Yeah, and I think in that, John, there's opportunity for the younger generation too with, you know, life insurance policies or something. I mentioned that through the business and outside of the business, I've got substantial life policies to cover issues that might come up, and you know, it wouldn't be that difficult to make an adjustment to your will or an addendum to your will to leave some funds behind for something like the golf club. And, you know, if you had 100 members that, you know, got involved with that sort of program, it could make a huge difference to an organisation that is largely privately funded and really is probably a little bit underfunded when you have a look at the scale of, you know, the land and the facility that is in a town like ours.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I think just in your day-to-day sort of moving around the towns where you live, you know, there's often a park named after someone here or a bench named after someone there or an oval or a club that honours someone's donation. It's a really lovely thing to be able to put back into your community like that. And I think that would be great to see more of it.
Mm.
That's the legacy.
Absolutely. Jason, now, this book that you've got, I see quite a few tabs that are highlighted there in front of you. So any other areas in that book that you want to raise? It sounds like it's a pretty interesting read.
No, other than the obvious point, you live life according to experiences, and your decisions in regard to investing or seeking advice is largely based on your experiences in those areas.
Mm.
And I think most of the time, our decisions, we think our decisions basically are probably 0.0001% of the overall marketplace in terms of what's going on, but probably occupy 80% of our headspace in regard to what we think is happening in the marketplace.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, so.
What is it said in there about the younger generations, the millennials, the Gen Y kids out there who've grown up in an internet era?
I'm a slow reader.
Not quite up to that chapter yet.
But having said that, it was interesting. There's a YouTube circulating in the office at the moment, YouTube clip, and it was an interview with Thomas Jeffrey, I think his name was, and he's in his 80s, and he founded an interactive stockbroking group back in the 50s and 60s, and in fact rolled out technology for the options put and call market. And that technology was a touchscreen technology, so it was about a decade before Apple.
Mm.
And this guy basically says in his interview, just be ambitious and have a go.
Mm.
And market cycles will come, they will go, they will come, they will go. Stick to your ambitions and see where it leads you.
Yep.
So it's quite interesting.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, look, and I think too, the title of that book, I think you said, was The Psychology of Money. And in any of the books I've read around psychology and money and pricing, I think people overinflate their opinions on certain things when money comes into it. And obviously the lifespans are long and time is long and lessons hurt at the time, but they often, you heal very quickly and life goes on. And it's interesting how many decisions are and aren't made necessarily because of, the psychology, mind games and so on.
Yeah, not everything can be – you can't make every decision based on a spreadsheet formula.
Mm.
When you guys are fathers and of your own children and, when you go home, you go into an environment where you're thinking at the back of your mind, I hope what I've done today is for the betterment of the children. You can't formulate that. Mm. That's an experience. That's history.
It's that whole psychology, that mentality, that's very much about risk profiles, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah. That is.
Well, we have seen over the years that children have, and maybe even grandchildren, have a big influence on how parents or grandparents' investment behaviour plays out. It's amazing, like some of the entrepreneurs we've dealt with over the years, the influence their children have on their decisions and direction is amazing.
Yep.
So it's something for us just to be aware of, that it's not necessarily just mum and dad in the room that are driving the directions and the thoughts. There's people in the background as well, and we definitely are seeing, as clients sort of move on in the age bracket, Jason, that the children do start to become a bit more involved with the planning process and overseeing investments and what's going to happen through that next generation as well.
Yeah, for sure, and that's a reflection of their background and upbringing, right? Like those born after 1990, for example, they've never experienced inflation compared to those in the 60s, 70s, 80s.
Mm.
So their consideration to inflation as an effect on their investment strategy is probably secondary. But those born in the 60s, 70s and 80s will have had the benefit of experiencing interest rates at 5, 10, 15, 18, 20%.
Yeah.
So their awareness of that background very much influences their decision making.
But it might actually override the parents' experience anyway.
Yeah, could be.
Yeah.
Now,
John's lost for words. I've never seen it.
No, I'm just letting you guys take the lead. You guys are the experts, and I again am the dumbest person in the room. Happy to put my hand up and play that card. I want to come back to the very start of this conversation because we've already been going 25 minutes, by the way. Can you believe that?
Wow.
It's going fast. Mm-hmm. When we talk about the potential of interest rates lowering this year or at least easing off and maybe not climbing too much more, I think when we caught up a couple of weeks ago to discuss what we might talk about in this podcast and how that, I guess, how that plays out in the business community, but also what that will mean for, again, for the mums and dads out there who are sitting on some money perhaps or have been trying to weigh up their budgets, you know, with the economy starting perhaps to settle a little bit. Again, what do you see happening this year a little more in terms of the business market first, but then later on how people might respond with that themselves is with their own discretionary spend?
I think broadly along that sort of theme, it appears there's still shortages in the markets. Like, you know, even like up at your golf club, the memberships are at the highest they've been for 15, 20 years. Participation's high. I'll look around my fishing, you know, the demand for people getting out on the bite or the schools of fish, you know, the demand's there. So I think we do run the risk of the economy heating up again. Like we're trying to bring in, you know, a lot of migration. So I think what's the number? Around 200,000 a year. It's a lot of new housing that's needed. I think there's challenges in the building sector. We're hearing that through the client base. So I think that theme around shortages might still be there, and that might be in terms of quality investments to access at a fair price too, John. So maybe people have missed out on the short-term opportunity in the share market, whether or not the property market's going to see a little jump in prices. If equity markets have jumped 10 or 12% in 6 months, wouldn't surprise me if housing prices jumped to 10 or 12% over the coming months. They might have already done part of that sort of post-Christmas. So I think there's challenges for investors, just whether or not there's value in the market or whether or not it's just a case of getting into the market and knowing that longer term things will play out if people are, you know, consistent and prepared to ride the time frame. I know it's boring, but maybe the conversation for a quick buck was maybe middle of last year or September quarter last year. Maybe that conversation's sort of gone at the moment.
I mean, you say that the thing, maybe that can take a bit of time. It could be a slow-minded thing. But when you stop now and you go, oh, hang on, COVID started 4 years ago. 4 years is a long time, and that feels like yesterday. You know, we've had so much go on since then, and yep. the pendulum of the market has swung in two directions, hasn't it, or many times. You know, it's all they're both extremes. So there's always opportunities to be had, and there's always something knocking on the door, isn't there? There's always something around the corner.
I had a good analogy over the weekend. I caught up with some school friends from a while ago now, but we had a weekend away, and just the differences in those in the group that might have made decisions around housing or investing in the early days compared to where they're set up now. Most of the guys I was with have been pretty proactive with buying a holiday home or buying some land or houses, but there's no doubt that compounding effect of getting into the markets early and making a decision rather than just sitting on the fence and going, well, I wish I had, or maybe I should have. There's no doubt that those that are a bit more decisive and sort of stick with their strategies have certainly done well over that 20, 30 years since we've left school.
Interesting. Yeah. So fair to say they had more aggressive risk profiles than others?
Maybe just getting on with life, but, you know, the guys by and large probably had pretty good educational opportunities. Some guys are, you know, of that group are in trades, but yeah, I think maybe what it does show is that in Australia there's definitely opportunities to prosper and develop a lifestyle and, you know, have families and so forth, but you've also got to take it too, and you've got to commit. So I think that commitment. And we've spoken through the podcast about side hustles and different things that different generations are doing. Well, part of it's commitment, isn't it? Mm. If you're going to have a side hustle going, well, you've got to put some effort into it.
Be ambitious.
Yep.
Yeah, whether that's fishing or golf or otherwise, hey?
Yeah, the problem with all the recreational activities, it leads into joining associations and golfing boards and all that sort of thing. But that's not a bad thing too if you've got the time and you've got your finances in good order and everything's your relationships are good, then you can put a little bit back into your community.
Well, that's right. Your bequest doesn't have to be financial, does it? It can be time-based.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep. Expertise-based. Yep. Yeah, excellent. Well, guys, that's been a pretty good conversation today and a nice way to do our first podcast for 2024. And I guess I'm certainly excited about what the year ahead could bring and, you know, interested in your opinions. Any last comments you want to throw at the listeners before we wrap up today?
No, I think we're pretty good, John. I think it's a year for getting out and beating the drum. I think we've got to get out there and speak to the people and yeah, I don't think it's going to happen just sitting, hiding behind the computer screen this year, John.
Mm. And look, as we record, we're in the Ropan office looking down the streets at Tarelgan. We can see beautiful blue skies and sunny outlook, and it's certainly calling us, that's for sure. Jason?
No, other than keep going with the risk-reward appetite and see where it leads.
Excellent. Well, for anyone who's interested in having a more in-depth chat about the things we've discussed today, please, by all means, reach out directly to Rodney and Jason. You'll find their contact information by visiting ropan.com.au. That is ropan.com.au. Now, Jason has also mentioned a book that he's watching and there's a YouTube video that's been discussed. If we can get that information from the boys, we'll pop them in the show notes. You can have a look at that. But of course, if you have your own financial advisors or trusted friends who have your best interests at heart, reach out to them too. That's all from us today. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you on our next installment of Conversations on Wealth.
We hope you have enjoyed this podcast. Please note that the advice discussed in this podcast may not necessarily be suitable to you because it contains general advice that has not been tailored to your personal circumstances. We ask that you please seek personal financial advice prior to acting on this information. To find out more about what was discussed in this podcast or to seek advice, we encourage you to contact the friendly staff at Ropan Financial Services by visiting www.ropan.com.au or referring to the notes in the description.